then there is a new material which is now flowing upon us, new knowledge of science. That also has to be absorbed and assimilated. And ancient systems of knowledge and religions, which have been put into the background for a long, long period, but even they are being recovered. The meaning of the Veda, for example, which has been lost to our age, or even since ages, is now getting recovered. So even the Vedic knowledge and similar other knowledge of other traditions, the revelations of that knowledge also are coming upon us. Therefore, in the search of a new synthesis, our question is, can the Bhagavad Gita help us in arriving at a new synthesis of knowledge? Our very need is such that it cannot confine us to any kind of dogmatism. Right from the beginning, we are asking new questions and we are in need of new answers. Where the knowledge of the past or past systems of knowledge can help us, but they will not be able to give us the final answer because we are in need of a new knowledge. That is why Sri Aurobindo says that we have to recognize that in the past also there have been synthesis. Just as we are in need of a synthesis today, a new synthesis, in the past ages also there were periods when a new synthesis was necessary, and new synthesis did come into existence, which were overpassed by new synthesis, and even those were passed over by new synthesis. And Sri Aurobindo himself describes at least four syntheses of the past, which came one after the other in the Indian tradition itself. The first is the Vedic synthesis. The second is the synthesis that we find in the Upanishads. Third is the synthesis of the Gita. The fourth is the synthesis of the Tantra. And now we are standing again at the edge of a new synthesis. But just as in the past, any new synthesis took into account the synthesis of the past, the earlier synthesis. Similarly, for building up a new synthesis today, we need to study all the past synthesis. We have to learn the synthesis that was made in the Veda, the Upanishadic synthesis, the Gita synthesis, Tantric synthesis. But among all these synthesis, Sri Aurobindo says, the synthesis made by the Gita takes a most important place. There is a speciality of the Gita, and that gives us a kind of a new perception on the Gita. Among all the synthesis of the past, the synthesis which we find in the Bhagavad Gita is going to be extremely most helpful to us. And it is for that reason that we are turning to the Gita. There are many other contexts also in which we are turning to the Gita, and we shall see as we move forward. But for the moment, let us pause here. And this is where we were last time. I had described the synthesis of the Veda to some extent, and we were about to enter into the synthesis of the Upanishads. But let us revise a little and see last time what we did with regard to the synthesis that we find in the Veda. As we know, Veda is reputed to be Veda, which means knowledge. Therefore, we might say that Veda is a book of knowledge. Veda is also reputed to be Karmakanda. Now, this Karmakanda gradually came to be only a practice of ritualism. But basically, Veda is Karmakanda in the sense that it gives us the secret of work. What is work? As Sri Krishna will tell us also in the Bhagavad Gita, that we have to distinguish between karma, akarma, and vikarma. Now, this distinction actually we find in the Veda itself. So, it is the knowledge of karma, and the greatness of some of the great Vedic rishis was that they declare, we have achieved perfection in works. Some of the Vedic rishis in their pronouncements, they have declared, we have now achieved perfection in works. So they had reached a climax. So what is work? What is the secret of work? And what is the perfection of works? What is the meaning of it? When can we say we have reached the perfection of works? This is the knowledge. The secret is also in the Veda. The Veda is also a book of prayers. Every hymn is a hymn of prayer. It is upasana, is worship. Therefore, in the Veda we find the earliest synthesis of knowledge, works and devotion. Bhakti, karma, jnana. But that is not all. There are some great peculiarities of the Vedic search and Vedic synthesis. The Veda discovered the presence of gods. Now, when we speak of gods, the present modern mind gets repelled, because belief in gods in modern times is supposed to be a result of primitive mentality. That is, because the religions developed in history, what is called polytheism got surpassed, overpassed, and there came gradually what is called monotheism. So it has come to be believed that monotheism is a superior religion and polytheism is a kind of a superstition. Only ignorant people can believe in gods. Only ignorant people can have what is called anthropomorphism. It's a long word. Anthropomorphism. A-N-T-H-R-O-P-O-M-O-R-P-H-I-S-M. Anthropomorphism. It comes from the word which deals with man. Anthropology, for example, is a study of man. So anthropomorphism is to regard God in terms of man, to believe that God behaves like human beings. You flatter God and you get some good results from God. That God is very pleased if you offer lots of offerings, and then he promises you that he will protect you whether you are right or wrong. Because you have approached God, therefore he is bound to be your advocate, and he will defend you as human beings do. Now this kind of belief in God or gods is what is called anthropomorphism. So it is believed that polytheism is fundamentally anthropomorphistic. Human beings who were afraid of all kinds of things in the world came to believe that there are forces, beings, gods behind these things, behind the sun and the moon and the stars and the tides and the ocean and rains and everything. There are so many spirits, so many gods, and you can approach them. If it rains, you say to rain god, please don't rain because I have to cross the ocean now. So if you approach him and if you give good gifts to Indra, then he will stop the rains for you. Now this is anthropomorphic view of gods.